with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and this night, Jim Berkland, lots of activity going on around the world right now, volcanic, tectonic, lots of shaking, and kind of a feeling of foreboding. Good time to have Berkland on. The following may be way outside Jim Berkland's field, or maybe there's a little bit of scissordy here. I refer, of course, to the Princeton experiments going on right now with regard to consciousness. Now, as we know, they have these eggs planted around the world. I referred to them early on in the show. These eggs are nothing more than computers that are spitting out random numbers, and that's what they ought to be, random. But all of a sudden, before large events on Earth, like 9/11, like the Sumatra disaster, and we could go on and on and on back through history as long as this experiment has been going on at Princeton, these graphs have started to just climb right off the chart prior to these events happening. Now, Jim, I wonder if you've heard of this at all, number one, and number two, whether you think it might have some relationship to what you're talking about with animals and with all these other somewhat esoteric things that point toward a big event like an earthquake.
Yes, there are so many unknowns. Now, I did hear that engineer back at Princeton talk about random generators and how they could affect them.
Yes.
Just with thought.
Yes.
And I've heard about your experiments on changing hurricanes and diverting them and things.
Yes.
So how could nobody? We can't rule the things out. I've had earthquake dreams that I can't explain, except they happened. I've had contact with a number of psychic people, and I know some are legitimate. There's just no question. So this is most intriguing. Now, you know about Charlotte King?
Yes.
Okay. On my site, she just put something about meteoric fireballs before the major eruption of Mount St. Helens in 1980. Well, they just had fireballs again up in the northwest.
That's correct.
And they're called meteoric fireballs, and they're usually blue, green, or orange.
Yeah. All right. Listen, that's another little piece of scissorgy that may be real. Let's go back to the phone. So many people waiting to talk to you. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Jim Berkland. Hello.
Hi, John.
Hi.
First, Art, I'm sorry to say, I'd like to say that I'd like the old days, back in the days when you were doing it on a more regular basis, because the feeling is a little different.
Well, but I appreciate my weekend.
Another comment, and regarding that is,
yes.
I especially like how you maintain the professionalism, especially with guests that you're not quite sure about, for whatever reason.
Okay.
I'm going to say that about tonight's guest. Jim, at least not until I hear what you have to say about the two things I'd like you to comment on.
Which are?
The first one is I'd like him to explain further about the idea that the core of the Earth is liquid, not a furnace, that magma is created by the friction between plates.
Okay.
And secondly, sorry, I'm going to listen off air. I've been waiting a while. And secondly, the fact, or my understanding is that sonic booms cause approximately 2.7 magnitude readings on seismometers. Can you explain how that...
Okay. All right. We'll attack both of them. Thank you. The core of the Earth first, I guess.
Okay. Well, they discovered in the 1930s through seismic waves that there is a solid inner core.
iron, isn't it? Thought
nickel
to be.
Iron, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so it allows the P wave to speed up a little bit going through the middle of the liquid core because there's a solid core inside. Meanwhile, the S wave can't make it there at all because it can't go through a liquid. So there, and that solid core reacting to the liquid core and mantle, apparently they're spinning at different directions, and that's where we get our magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't have a liquid core at all, I guess there wouldn't be a magnetic field. Let's see.
Then the sonic boom's registering 2.7.
Yes. Now, a P wave is really a sound wave traveling through the Earth. And it's a push-pull like a slinky. You have it in one hand and give it a jolt, and you can see the wave passing longitudinally through the slinky. And it's the compression rarefaction. So when the sound wave hits the ground, it's like an explosion, really. And so P waves mostly form underground and come out to the Earth's surface, and then you can hear them in the deep, low-frequency rumble.
Right.
But it works the other way, too. And I understand that when they had these experimental planes, there'd be a lot of airquakes that the military wouldn't want to admit to.
Does that, in fact, register at about a 2.7, typically, or is?
Well, it would take a pretty big one. The 2.7 is fairly strong. But what was interesting is that once it hits the ground, it travels faster in the ground
yes.
than it does in the air. So
yes.
if it happens off at Santa Monica, they can then...
Why is that, Jim? Why does it... I know it travels faster through the ground, through rock, than it does through the air. That seems illogical.
Not really, because it's the spacing of the molecules.
Oh.
They're close together. They just like a bunch of pennies in a line. You hit one, remember, and knocked one off the end?
Gotcha.
Okay, that's all the difference. If you used to notice that swimming in the creek, would click a couple rocks together, and you could hear it underwater faster than you would hear it in the air.
I don't know that I ever made that measurement personally,
yeah.
but okay.
Just stumbled onto it.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Berkland. Hello.
Yes, I have four quick questions for you and your guests.
Four might be too many.
Let's all right, I'll cut it down to three. The first question has to do with the Earth's magnetic field reversing. I saw a documentary that says every 300,000 years or
more,
it flips over from north to south and back to south. And the North Pole goes down, the positive
right.
goes to the
right.
south. And,
so your question is that true or what?
Yeah, my question is, would this have any effect on the plates, the electromagnetic phenomena, and
okay,
and my second...
All right, hold it right there. Would the tectonic plates go nuts if we had a reversal?
No.
No?
The electromagnetic field of the Earth
yes.
itself.
Well, it goes through a null point. When you shrift, when the magnetic needle north-seeking suddenly becomes south-seeking, it takes several thousand years for this transition to occur based on studies that we did in the volcanic rocks.
There are others, though, have said they occur quite quickly, relatively quickly.
Well, show me an example.
So.
I mean, we have the rock example, and there are very few zones that show transitions, but where they do, at the ages show, it takes several thousand years, like three or four. Thousand.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, when it goes through a null point, we have no protective ionosphere.
Right.
It means all the cosmic radiation comes booming through, and there's bound to be a lot of genetic changes.
Okay. Second question?
My second question has to do with that. I watched a documentary by the U.S. Geological Survey, and they said that the Mississippi River and the reason why Louisiana is below sea level was the fact that there was a magnitude 0.12 or 15 earthquake that shifted that part of the United States.
Oh, gosh, that wouldn't have been from the USGS.
Okay. Well,
there was a magnitude 8, three of them in 1811, 1812 that caused the Mississippi to reverse. But Louisiana is not below sea level.
Let's get something straight right here. You read in a lot of science fiction about magnitude 11, 12, 13, 14. Are these things either possible or not? Is 10 the biggest earthquake that could happen?
There's no theoretical limit except the strength of the rocks. The rocks have to store up strain.
Oh.
And the rocks are going to yield before they reach 11 or 12. But when the big meteor at Chicxulub hit down in Guatemala,
mm-hmm.
Honduras, it was equivalent to about a 15, magnitude 15.
Wow.
But that was extraterrestrial, and the Earth can't store up that much strain to yield that kind of a magnitude.
All right, so then it's generally thought that anything that would be produced on the Earth or within the Earth would be within that 10 limit.
Yeah, less than 10. In fact, Richter scale, they never had a 9 Richter, which the 8.9 were a couple of them. Now they've upgraded them to 9.2 to 9.5.
Right. Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Berkland. Hi.
Hello, this is Dan from California.
Hello, Dan.
I'm glad to speak to you guys this morning, Jim and Art, or Art and Jim.
Yes.
My question, one thing is I'd like to be sympathetic to Jim and tell him that his job has to be like looking outside of a soundproof window, and you're trying to yell at the person that there's a tidal wave coming, and they're only looking at your gestures of jumping up and down and not hearing what you're trying to say. And I hope that you do be able to sleep at night, because you can't save the world. And the reason why I think that it's such a problem for you is that it's life versus economics. If you try to get to a large TV station and tell people what's going to happen, what would we do? And there, here's a question within itself. What would you do if you could get on Channel 10 at 5 o'clock and warn everyone?
Yeah.
Are we saying evacuate a whole city? What's the cost of that? Where are we going to put them? Or are you telling them to prepare? And
it
isn't awful like knowing that that's like somebody from across the field shooting a bullet, and then 3 days to 4 days it may hit you? Is it more like that? That's why they don't want us to know?
Just view me as a meteorologist, recognizing a low-pressure cell developing out in the Atlantic, saying, watch it. Let's see what other clues are coming. You can make your own decisions if you're going to board up your windows or not and evacuate. But you're not going to evacuate for an earthquake. That just is not practical. There's too many problems that would develop. The traffic couldn't move. I urge people to check the seismic windows when the maximum tides are occurring, and then watch for the local effects. If you have in San Jose, for example, here was this formerly artesian well that hadn't been artesian for 25 years. It suddenly began to flow so rapidly, it was flooding out the neighborhood, and so the city fathers came out and put a stop on the top, and it blew the cork. So they put a stronger cap on it, and they walked away and figured their job was done. It was April 17, 1906, the day before the big one hit San Francisco.
Wow.
So there are these kinds of clues that develop, and if people just turn their back on them, they're never going to recognize them. And so I'm just keep. And by the way, I have no problem whatsoever sleeping. I'm very happy with what I'm doing, and very comfortable with myself. I went to the Great Pyramid, and when I came out of the Great Pyramid, I suddenly realized what it's all about. Why are we here? We are here to seek our purpose and strive to achieve it. Anything less is a waste of existence. And that just took a whole load off me. I said, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Well, it's important that you be comfortable with what you're doing, because it's very controversial. And without that comfort, there'd be a lot of rough moments. No question about it, Jim.
Well, let me tell you, I just got somebody named Woody in Astoria says, brief little message on my website, has Jim just lent credibility to Art Bell? You've got the problem, too.
All right, Jim. You're on the air with Jim Berkland. Good morning.
Hi, guys. Okay, I'm calling from Toronto, Canada.
Yes, sir.
And my question is, I believe it must have been your guest. I saw on a television special. It was, I believe, studying a volcano, actually in the volcano in somewhere in Italy. Anyway, there were some seismologists and volcanologists who were commenting that studying a volcano using satellites and other remote electronics equipment is good enough, but to actually climb in a volcano and study it is really just foolish and just being a bare-chested, silly, macho type person. So I'm wondering specifically, how much importance do you suggest in studying volcanoes actually in the volcano rather than just using remote electronics, and smelling the smoke, hearing the faint rumblings, timing them apart, in person? How important is that?
How important is it to go down into a volcano to study it, Jim?
Not very important for me. I've never done that and wouldn't plan to do it. We have plenty of robots that will handle that now and fly over. The only volcanic flows I've seen were, you know, as they were entering the ocean and pouring over in little solid waterfalls.
So you don't want to find a tube to crawl into at St. Helens?
No, thank you.
Okay, so I guess the answer is instruments will do, sir. First time caller line, you're on the air with Jim Berkland. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I got two questions. I guess one might be a little outside of Jim's realm, but the first is, does he have any, like, I guess, stats, for lack of a better term? I mean, just to add, I believe what he's saying, but to lend credibility, like, so you've predicted 180 of hit.
All right. Exactly what is your hit and miss rate, Jim?
Well, I haven't even bothered. It's around 70 to 75% in the last 30 years. I haven't counted them all up lately. There are, you know, literally a couple of thousand predictions, and I've hit about 70%.
There you are. 70%, sir. How's that?
But okay. Come to my website. Visit my website and subscribe to my newsletter, and you'll get the exact details. I gave some figures on the Puget Sound quakes. Oh, by the way, Art.
That's an important question. This is an important question for your own credibility, and you're saying it's right around 70%, right?
Yes.
That's a big item. Does that answer your question, caller?
Yeah, it does. I have one other question, too, and it might be a little... But when you were talking about could you drill into a volcano and let pressure out, I had the same sort of theory with hurricanes, and I don't know if this is clean out of his realm, but the whole concept of a hurricane is that it's a condensed eye. And couldn't you just blow that eye up, suck the oxygen out of that eye, and collapse the hurricane on itself?
It is out of your field, Jim.
But it's a low pressure. The lowest pressures they get is around, you know, 26 inches in the middle of eye of a hurricane. But I think maybe they were already doing that with HARP and chemtrails and Lord knows what else. I think there's a lot of weather experimentation going on that we don't even know about.
Yes, no doubt. No doubt. A lot of weather experimentation, I'm sure, is ongoing. How are you just going to continue at about the same rate making predictions the way you have been in the newsletter, or do you have plans that go beyond that now, or what?
Well, you know, I've had a number of people that are going to write my life story, or they're going to set up a new program, and they all seem to drop out once they talk to high science. High science just doesn't have any time for me, and we'll see what happens after the book is released here in December.
Well, high science isn't doing so very well themselves in the prediction category.
They made 12 predictions that I knew about, and none have hit. And so I think it was pretty frustrating for them. And obviously, I have hit so many to a television crew. I was on front line, made predictions for a local quake and a major quake around the world, and hit both of them on the camera. And those were carried. And we shall see now. Oh, by the way, I want to try again. If people want to send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, but I want them to put a couple of dollars in there to make it worth more while.
I see.
And I will send them a sample copy of my newsletter.
All right. Well, where do you send a couple bucks?
Easy enough. Jim Berkland, spell it any way you want. P.O. Box 1926 in the little town of Glen Ellen. Two words, G-L-E-N-E-L-L-E-N, California, and the zip code is 95442. A business-sized, self-addressed, stamped envelope with a couple dollars in it, and I'll be happy to send them a sample copy of my newsletter.
All right, well, that's certainly fair enough. And also, there are going to be many people who just heard that and said, damn it, I didn't have a pencil or something. So I'll tell you what, folks, we'll take a break right here. And when we come back, we'll repeat that information for you. So that will give you an opportunity to go and get a pen, pencil, and paper, because I know you didn't have it ready. Now you will have no excuse. Get that pencil, Get that paper right now.
At area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Rocking through the night this night with Jim Berkland. He predicts earthquakes, much to the dismay of the USGS and some others, but he does it rather successfully at about, what, 70%? That's pretty good in my book. All right, as promised, hopefully you've gathered together writing implements and such, and to get a free copy, well, not free, it's a couple bucks, you know, for shipping and licking and whatever, a couple of bucks for Jim's newsletter, and you can decide for yourself. And we promised you that address, so you could now write it down, that you're armed and ready. Go ahead, Jim.
It's P.O. Box 1926. That was 4 years before I was born, 1926. Glen Ellen, G-L-E-N-E-L-L-E-N, California, and the zip is 95442.
And you personally put them all in the envelope and licked those envelopes shut.
Yes, I'm the one. Yeah, it took me about 3 months that last time.
Uh-huh.
But, that was for free. When I ask for a couple of bucks, the numbers go way down.
I can imagine there would be a difference, all right. Uh-huh. People love that word, free.
Oh, my, yes.
however, if you have a really good record of predicting earthquakes, then people will pay attention, so I'm sure there'll be some dollars on the way.
Yeah, go right to the website. We summarize the predictions each month on the website, but there's a lot more information that goes into the eight-page newsletter.
Okay, here we go. Let's go here. You're on the air with Jim Berkland. Good morning. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was calling to ask if Mr. Berkland had mentioned he had a business phone number that he was going to give out to make information available to him, and the other was about the Puget Sound area that he was about to give you information on.
Okay, one at a time. Phone. Do you want to give out some phone number?
Well,
Jim?
I just have my own personal phone. But go to my
You want to give that
website.
Out? Want to give out your personal phone number? I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, it's on my website. If you go to the trouble getting the website, you'll see it there.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's amazing. All right, and then the Puget Sound area, right, ma'am?
That's right. He was very excited to tell you something about it when you were discussing his correct hits, right?
Go right ahead.
Well, I just had one at Olympia of 3.3 today, and I'd predicted a 3 or better in Washington or Oregon, so that's a 100% hit. And I just had compiled the list of all of the quakes in that area since the year 2000. There were 22 quakes that exceeded a 3.0, and 18 of the 22 were in a window, as was this one. So the numbers are very favorable to a maximum tidal period.
It may well be that there is nothing in this category right now, but it always bears asking, Jim, do you see any, you know, people obviously are concerned about the bigger earthquakes.
Oh, yeah.
I fully understand that for your, to establish credibility for what you do, you have to get them big and small, but are there any big ones coming?
Well, everyone's concerned about the Northwest and that Cascadia Trench where the 9-plus magnitude quake hit on January 26th of 1700. Interesting how they came up with that. They knew the Indian legends about the big wave that came in and the villages that were destroyed. Well, geologists have mapped ups and downs of the seacoast there and forests that were buried salt waves that come in and killed kind of poisoned the soils.
Yes.
But then in Japan, where they had written records for that time of 1700, there was this mysterious tsunami that came in and killed several hundred Japanese.
Yes.
And so they had the records, and we had the other kind of records. Approximately, 300 years ago, we knew that was true. And so their date, they gave it 3 days to travel across the Pacific. And so whenever the tsunami hit them, they subtracted 3 days, and it ends up as June 26th. And I've looked at the old tides there, and then that was at a time in between two huge tides. It was in a semi-quiet period between two maximum tides, Peridian spring tides.
Okay. My question was, do you see any big earthquakes coming?
Yes. But just when? See, we have to... If you suddenly get mass beachings of whales and dolphins...
Okay, so apparently you don't see anything immediate that you want to...
Oh, that's true. I would tell you if I had something in particular. Now, I'm troubled, like you are, about all of these animal reports, and we heard about the thing about solar flares have picked up during this period when they're not supposed to be happening. We've had some northern lights, and we had this fireball. And going back through a lot of records, there were surprising how many times there's a mention of a fireball prior to a big quake.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Jim Berkland. Good morning.
Good morning. Actually, good evening and aloha from Paradise here in Hilo.
Oh,
all right.
Yes.
Yes, I live in the shadows. This is Rich calling from Hilo, by the way. And I am living in the shadows, basically the largest volcanic range on Earth.
Yep.
At least that's what they tell us here. Mm-hmm. Mauna Kea is just about 20 miles away from the harbor here. And I moved here about a year ago from San Luis Obispo, where I had just had experienced my first 6.5 in December 03, Jim, if you can recall that.
Sure. 22nd.
It was a pretty good shake. I was living right on the beach there. And I haven't felt even nothing here in the Hilo area. However, there are an awful lot of USGS vans and trucks and quite a few personnel that come down in the Hilo area that I just assume they're over in the Volcano National Park up in Mauna Kea, Mauna Loa. My question being, I haven't felt anything in almost a year here, and I'm wondering what's your take on the predictions and the possibilities of something here on the Big Island.
Well, I'm really surprised you haven't felt one of the fours they've had there in the last few weeks. Hawaii, the Big Island is the shakiest island in Hawaii, and of all of the states, if you take the area involved, Hawaii is the number one shaky state, more than California or Alaska, because of its area. The chances of feeling a quake in Hawaii are much greater than any place in California or Alaska. But, you know, just in general. But yes, as to a really big one, they're mostly concerned about what might happen over on the eastern rift zone. And a big landslide, a submarine landslide, might cause a local tsunami. And of course, we're going to be over there in June, so maybe you can set up something for us.
All right. Well, I think I once asked you, and it was kind of an interesting answer, as I recall. If you could be at the site of a very large earthquake, would you do it? Would you go there?
Yes, but I wouldn't be on top of the county building as I was for the Loma Prieta quake.
Uh-huh.
That's the only quake of the 80-plus that I have felt, the only one that ever frightened me. I didn't think the building was going to withstand it. It was moving back and forth about 5 feet. And my office was a shambles, all my rocks and books that toppled over on the facing east, and they opened. I couldn't see the floor, shelves dropping. It was quite an experience, and...
Well, I lived 10 years of my life on the island of Okinawa, Jim, and I went through a lot of really big earthquakes. Mm-hmm. And I would have no desire whatsoever to experience another one. And I have experienced several. We had a pretty good one here in the desert, as you know, a number of years
right.
ago. Real
yeah, you called me right after
snorter.
It.
Oh, man. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Jim Berkland. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Pleasure speaking to you and Jim.
Hey.
I've enjoyed and learned a lot from the both of you over the years here. A comment and a quick question. I have, Art, you're a cat man. I'm a ferret man. I have several ferrets, and it was interesting. About a week ago, they began behaving very, very strangely.
Ferret and, misbehavior.
Well, I don't know if it was misbehavior. All I know is I didn't feel it, but my brother did in Boston. I guess there was a quake up in Quebec.
Oh, yes, 5.1 or 5.2 or so, yeah.
I'm 60 miles south of Lake Erie, so I don't know, you know, about...
You could have felt that easily, yes.
You know, that was the one thing. And then the other thing is, I heard your other fireworks buddy call, Art. I'm a pyrotechnician, and basically we did built a 36-inch diameter shell and fired it at a big competition up here in our area. And the gas company actually brought a seismologist in because about 2 miles away, I guess they had an underground line running.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually worried that this thing coming out of the mortar would affect 2 miles away, their gas line. Yeah. Would the waves, would there be that easily, Jim, the transmission of the force of, you know, it was about a 970-pound shell that we popped about 2,000 feet in the air.
Would that show up seismically, yeah. Jim?
Yes, that would vibrate the ground for sure, and I can understand why they might be a little concerned, especially if their gas line was in weak materials. It might have a little liquefaction and fissures. It doesn't hurt to instrument when you're having a blast like that.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Berkland. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Jim. I wanted to salute your credibility rather than take any away from it.
Okay.
And I'll give a cross-disciplinary example. You and I go back about the same time and in birth, and this is Rich from Lawrence, Kansas.
Uh-huh.
But back when the earth was cooling, I worked as a grad student and actually lived there as part of my pay at Northwestern University Dearborn Observatory.
No, I thought you were saying you were here when the earth was cooling.
I was wondering about
that.
No.
All right.
Well, I just think that I was born back when the earth was cooling.
I see.
Yeah. But anyway, this was before J. Allen Hynek was even there, and Emanuel Velikovsky's book came out, Worlds in Collision,
yep.
And the chairman at the time not only panned it, but that's all they could talk about. They, you know, me thought the gentleman spoke too much, And then they wrote letters to the publisher, and who I think was a one of Bennett Cerf's subsidiaries, and forced them to stop publishing it because with the threat that they wouldn't adopt textbooks. And so, you know, Velikovsky later turned out to be right. And of course, another publisher did take it up. I think it was Holt or somebody like that. But also, I wanted to, also, your credibility again. My dad barely missed being killed in the great Galveston tidal wave.
Yeah.
And I won't go into the story about why he wasn't, except I wouldn't be here otherwise. And the estimate then was 30,000 killed in one day. It's in the newspapers. We have photos of the newspapers and all. And yet now you go and read about it more and more by the more recent experts, and they've got it down to 6,000. And, yep. And I just wondered if you ever studied that phenomenon at all. But
well, we were talking about that, the sort of the rewriting of history of calamities and mass deaths and the numbers involved and how they shift and change so strangely, right, Jim?
Yes, and there was another big hurricane in the Keys where they had some kind of unemployed people were put to work down there, and they didn't really take care of them, and there were many, many killed in a big hurricane there that they knew was coming but didn't pay that much attention to it.
Oh, West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Brickland.
Hi, Art. This is Jacob from Preston. Hi, Jim.
Hey, hi.
I have a quick question. Has anyone thought about the possibility of earthquakes on the moon or Mars?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know it sounds far-fetched, but you have to believe.
No, not at all.
If there's earthquakes on planet Earth.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was one of the first things that turned me around back in 1975.
Yeah. And if NASA plans to build and President Bush wants to go to Mars and the moon, they better start listening to guys like you, because we're going to invest a lot of money on there.
And well, the thing is, the strongest quake they ever measured on the moon was about a 4.8. Most of them are just ones and twos. But the thing is, they almost all occur once a month when the Earth and moon are closest at perigee. And there's, as they say, there's no serious alternative to a tidal explanation. And
do we know enough about the interior of the moon, Jim, to understand the dynamics of what's going on under there?
It doesn't have a magnetic field today. It used to have.
Right.
And so it almost certainly doesn't have a liquid core, and it doesn't have active volcanoes.
Right.
It doesn't have moving plates.
So what the heck's earthquaking?
It's the stress from the Earth. From the gravity from the Earth at perigee.
Which is moving.
It's actually deforming the moon. You know, it's moving up and down. In fact, the solid Earth goes up and down about 3 feet under the full moon. And that's enough. That's why the gravity is also effective away from the ocean tides, because there's an Earth tide.
You're saying the Earth bulges out three feet.
The moon pulls it up, deforms it.
I never noticed that.
Yeah. And I didn't know it either when I first got into earthquake predictions. I just sort of surmised that since the ocean water was going up and down, probably the solid Earth was going up and down too, and that could trigger quakes, and that's what got me into this.
And they have confirmed this how?
Oh, yeah. They
what,
can
satellites
actually
or what?
Gravimeters. The gravity of the Earth decreases when you get further away from the core, from the center of the Earth, and they can actually see the within 2 hours of the full moon, the Earth bulges up, and ocean
tides.
That's
eerie to even think about. That's really weird.
Yeah, well, you know, but Io, the closest satellite to Jupiter.
Yes.
It goes up and down about 300 feet every Io day, and all that fluxion it generates magma. They have sulfur volcanoes on them. The satellite
aisle. Friction is heat.
Yeah.
Right? Very quickly, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Brickland. Hi.
Hi there, and good morning to you, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call, Art.
Sure.
I wanted to ask Jim about when they dig into... I'm really sensitive to Earth's movements. I've had multiple injuries, and that's one of the reasons. Plus, I've lived on the West Coast, and I've felt earthquakes, and I've been over in Europe, and I know the feeling in the big cities with the underground and what like the trains and that are underground, And when they tunnel underground like that, and they're putting an underground tunnel, does that have any effect elsewhere on the Earth? Like, if there's tunneling going on, would that be...
Not miles away.
Not miles away?
In the county building, we're on the seventh floor, and all the women especially began to complain they were feeling earthquakes. Well, it turns out they were building the electric rail, and the jackhammers out in the street...
Really?
...were vibrating up the columns of the building a few, 50 yards away. And vibrating the building. And so after they finished the jackhammers, the little microquakes ended.
So, and there are people, though, that are also sensitive in the way she described, aren't
right.
there?
Right, no doubt.
Is there one single place where these people report their feelings, Jim?
Well, right on my site. We have it for sensitives. We have it for dreamers. We have it for... Just go to my site, syzygyjobe.com.
Anything, really.
Yeah, dot anything. So I've placed for phenomena, earthquake sensitive, seismic sentries with the pets and animals. Frank Condon is a scientist that measures electric fields in Southern California, and he has a site here. And we have places just to ask questions of me, earthquake sensitives, phenomena.
All right, well, we've got a link on our site right now. And I'm sure a number of people are going to make it there. Jim, we're out of time. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. It
Great.
Always is.
I really enjoyed it.
And seismically yours. Take care, buddy.
Thank you. You too.
Good night. And here she is. All the right words to get us out of here. It's been a great weekend. Thank you. See you next weekend. Until then, from the high desert, good night.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it till tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you?